And Joan Cusack is in it, too. Because, of course, she is. She was around. No, I love Joan Cusack. Boop. Hello.
Oh.
Oh, welcome to a very groggy and very sleep-deprived animation station. God, what episode is this even?
14?
Yeah, is this 14? I'm sorry, guys. It's actually been... 14 or 15. It's kind of actually been a while since we've recorded one of these.
A little too long.
Which is... And that's... It's mostly my bad, but it's also the fact that... Alright, so... The past couple weekends, we've either been doing lots of things, or there was a holiday or something, and that's kind of what coincides with it. I guess that's what we're gonna go with. But it's okay, because this past weekend we celebrated the 4th of July, and we have a semi-patriotic movie today.
Yeah, I suppose so.
Kind of. Arguably patriotic.
Yeah, arguably.
It just makes me think of Maine, which makes me think of Stephen King.
Huh.
Which makes me think of The Shining. And how many time and how many Shining related videos I've watched this week? No, I mean, like, I found a bunch of like really cool theory ones and stuff on YouTube. And I'm like, oh man, these are great. Plus, the guy has a super crazy Manchester accent, which I love. So that alone was worth me watching it for free on YouTube. So
really gonna watch that movie.
You've never seen The Shining?
No.
What? What? Hold on. Pause recorded. No, you know what? We're going to let it go. We need to memorialize this. What do you mean you've never seen The Shining?
I never saw The Shining.
How have you never seen The Shining? But you know enough of the references to be able to probably pick up what's going on.
Oh, yeah. I mean, obviously.
I'm sorry. I mean, if you've seen the South Park episode where Randy buys the Blockbuster, you probably know what's up.
I haven't. I've seen the episode of The Simpsons where they had
Watch House. That works fine, too. That is equally good.
If someone's done it, The Simpsons has already done it.
That they have many times. To the point where they had to act... It still bothered me that they actually retconned how Marge and Homer met.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why did they do that? It was so dumb.
I don't know.
It was so dumb. He doesn't even like Nirvana.
I think it's because... Otherwise, it becomes a period piece.
But technically, it was. I mean, like, well, okay, not a period piece, but...
Well, because the characters never age.
Yeah, but if they can... As soon as they started incorporating phones, I was like, I'm peacing out, guys.
Really?
Yeah, well, like, as soon as they're like, Lisa has a cell phone, I'm like, no. Number one, she doesn't really have anybody to call.
That's true.
Which is not me being mean, it's true.
No, yeah.
So,
got me there.
No, anyway. But no, sorry. In all seriousness, you should watch The Shining, or at the very least, let me give it to you. Or lend it to you, whatever. And yeah, we'll go from there. Because it's so good. It's like my favorite movie.
Really?
Which explains a lot, really.
I did not know that about you.
It's definitely my favorite horror movie. That's fair. It's just it's so good. But anyway.
Way off topic.
So, anywho.
We watched...
And we're only 3 minutes in.
Still better than...
Yeah.
The one episode.
Which one?
Like, All's Dogs Go to Heaven.
Yeah, oh yeah.
It was super loopy, and it was like...
Hey, that was worth it, though. That was some terrific banter.
That was a good one, but
I personally think that was great banter.
I think before I cut it, it was just like 10 minutes. What is going on?
Yeah, we were
so tired.
We were very tired, but it's okay. But anyway, this week
we watched The Iron Giant.
Yes, the Brad Bird directed 1999 animated film. Feature.
Yeah.
It takes place during the Cold War, 1957, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
Thereabouts,
I think that's what it was.
Mm-hmm. But so it's if you're like an animation buff or animation junkie, you've probably seen it.
Yeah.
But if you haven't, we'll give you the skinny with a very kind of like brief synopsis.
Yeah.
And get in, I guess, a little bit more to like themes, things that we noticed about it, why it didn't do as well as it should have.
Yeah.
All that. So,
yeah.
Do you want to give them a brief synopsis?
Sure.
Robro?
So, The Iron Giant is a movie about this boy, Hogarth, who, living in the Cold War in 1957, and something crashes in his hometown.
Mm-hmm. Of Rockwell, Maine.
Yes.
Named after Norman Rockwell.
Yes, of course.
Yep, naturally.
And so, he ends up investigating it, and... it turns out to be this giant, this iron giant.
Yeah. Well, he thinks it's an alien.
Yeah, he thinks, I mean, he's right.
Or, like,
an invader
from Mars. Like, technically it is.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, at least it's an intergalactic
visitor, yeah. Yeah, space thing.
Yeah.
Fallen down to Earth. And so he's, initially he's, aggressive towards it, but then... he sees it's getting shocked by, like, electrical, like, mm-hmm. power lines.
Yeah, like, he notices that, the giant apparently eats metal. Like,
yeah.
it sustains itself by eating metal, which I'm still a little bit fuzzy about how he actually, like, processes it, or what it is that he kind of, like, derives out of it, or maybe he just has some kind of, like...
Like, internal working
like a turbine or whatever.
Turns it into power of some sort.
So, yeah, some sort of, perhaps, like, factory or...
Yeah, well, clearly there's a lot going on.
A steel poop factory, I don't know.
Well, clearly there's a lot going on underneath, like, on the inside of that robot that we don't understand.
This is true. And we're not just talking about his emotions.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, but...
So he ends up saving and then sort of later befriending the robot?
Yeah, like, so what happens is that the robot happens upon this electrical... It's like a power station that's in this secluded part of the forest.
So I think he starts eating, and then he ends up, like...
Well, yeah, I think he goes for one of, like, I think he goes for, like, a power line, or he goes for one of, like, these huge, like...
Yeah, the steel towers.
Yeah, steel towers. And then he tries to eat it, but then he ends up getting shocked, and then gets tangled in power lines. Hogarth is like, oh, that's messed up, I should go help him.
So he shuts down the power for the whole town, and then, the robot shuts down,
mm-hmm.
As far as he's aware, and then I think he...
And then after that, Hogarth gets found by his mom, Annie, who was working late. She works at the local diner, and, she ends up finding him afterwards, and, apparently they've got a little bit of, I think it's heavily implied, or it's not directly stated, but it's very heavily implied that his father had died during the Korean War several years earlier.
Which
has kind of led to a little bit of a strain, which is why Annie has to work so much to be able to make ends meet, so...
Right.
So,
he ends up befriending the robot, befriending the Iron Giant.
Yeah.
I can't quite remember, there's like
Which part?
There's, like, the whole thing where his body is in separate parts. Like, he loses his hand, so...
Oh, yeah, no, that's a little bit later. So, initially what happens is that Hogarth goes back again, or he goes back to see the giant the day after, or, like, the day after school, I guess. Like, when school lets out, he goes into the woods, has this panel of what looks like aluminum siding or something.
Yeah, it's just and, like a big piece of scrap metal.
I don't know, like, whatever it was, but... he brings it over into the forest and, like, basically tries to set up what is, like, it's not quite like a trap, he's just more of, like, trying to entice the robot to be over there. He's got this camera, he plans on trying to get a picture of it, but, he's just sitting there forever, and then eventually he happens upon the robot, or the robot finds him, and, they start to learn a little bit more about each other. The robot finds Hogarth, and, he shows the, power switch that Hogarth had used to shut the power off so that he wouldn't get electrocuted to death. And they have a moment, and it's very sweet.
Right.
And he teaches the giant how to talk.
Yeah,
like,
he teaches him
rock tree. And hearing Vincent K. Diesel say... Vincent K. Diesel say rock and tree with such a steely demeanor.
Yeah.
So beautiful. And I'm sorry, that was a robot pun. I did not intend that at all. But anyway... That's just like, you just need to experience Vince Diesel pre-Groot to really get the whole depth of, like, I didn't really know who he was when I first saw this movie. Like, I saw when I was, like, I think the first time I saw was in, like, high school or something. And then when I later realized that he was like, oh, it's a dude from The Pacifier, and now I know it's like, oh, it's that guy that's in every single Fast and the Furious movie.
Yeah. I actually didn't see it until, like, college, I think.
Really?
Like post-college.
Do you remember where? Or, like...
I think it was weirdly on Netflix for a little bit.
That sounds about right.
And I was like, oh, everyone I know loves this movie. I'll watch it.
Yeah, because it's fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's great.
Yeah.
There's a reason everyone loves it.
But it's, let's get a little bit back more into the story. There's actually a part that we missed out earlier wherein the way that the giant is initially kind of discovered is that there's this fisherman that is stuck in a very, very turbulent sea. late at night. I mean, he's trying to find the lighthouse to be able to make his way back to the coast.
And he sees light, and he thinks it's the lighthouse, and it turns, and it's...
It was the giant that had been two lights previously crashing through the atmosphere like a meteor.
Right.
And nobody believes the old guy, because he seems like kind of a kook. He's like kind of like an old man McGucket, I guess. Yeah. So... but there's this beatnik that also lives in town who owns the local scrap metal junkyard named Dean, who is great.
Yeah, he's...
I wish that Harry Connick really Jr. good. Looked like him.
He does not.
I was like, oh man, I had such a crush on Dean. Still kind of do. But, yeah, but, so Hogarth ends up befriending Dean also in the process.
Right, that first scene with Hogarth.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which then leads us into, he ends up bringing the Iron Giant to Dean's scrapyard.
Yeah, to hide from...
To hide and also to be able to eat.
Yeah, well, and he's hiding from a government agent named Kent Mansley.
Kent Mansley.
He works for the government. He's voiced by Christopher McDonald or Shooter McGavin from Happy Gilmore.
Yeah.
He just does a great job. He chews so much scenery, but it's so fantastic.
Yeah.
Like, he's got such a power-hungry, really slimy demeanor,
mm-hmm.
but the way that he goes about, like, trying to manipulate Hogarth and trying to get him to tell him secrets about what's going on. Well, because initially, Kent comes into the town, he's really pretentious, really pompous.
Right, yeah.
Like, assumes, like, oh, like, these guys are just bumpkins, and then, yeah. And then he sees half of his car gets eaten by the giant.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, okay, this is actually serious, so... But yeah, so he ends up, initially he just goes over to Hogarth's house to investigate, his BB gun that, was broken during the initial scuffle with the Iron Giant. Like, when he was out trying to find the giant, I think he dropped his BB gun, the giant stepped on it.
Right, yeah, that I remember.
I think it was this local, like, farmer or something had found it and, given it to Kent, who connected it back to the Hughes family,
Yeah, I just remember...
And then he ends up living with them.
Yeah, well, so he rents the room.
Yeah, and he's such a creep. Oh, my God. He's like, scamming on Annie. I'm like, you stay away from her. She has been promised to Dean, who respects her. Kent Mansley. He works for the government.
That first scene where he's like, hey, sports!
Hey there, Tiger. I'm Kent Mansley. I work for the government. and then, like, everything kind of following it when he's trying to, he's basically interrogating Hogarth, but he's trying to do it in a seemingly very, innocuous or, like, friendly way, but it's really not coming across. Yeah. He's like, hey, Buckaroo Skipper, where are you going? Where are you going?
Where are you going?
I'm going out! Leave me alone!
Yeah, right.
I felt so bad for him.
Yeah,
so what happens is that, the government actually does end up getting called in to deal with it.
Right.
I think Kent intercepts some of the pictures that Hogarth was taking. Like, he inadvertently took a selfie or something, and the giant was in the background of the picture. Remember when he was changing all the negatives? Like, he turned the bathroom into a dark room and had changed all the pictures that he found on Hogarth's camera. And he found the one of him taking his picture of himself that showed the giant in it, which is like, that's his proof. That's how Kent's going to be able to get the government in there and then become like a congressman or whatever.
Well,
because
he got the general to eventually come.
Yep. Oh, the general who's played by John Mahoney.
Yes.
Who is great.
Yeah.
Love John Mahoney.
Just all around a good voice acting cast on this one.
Plus, I also associate him as being the dad from Say Anything, which is great. Which is another movie that you should see if you haven't seen it yet. So it's a very young John Cusack and Ione Skye. How can you not be into that? And Joan Cusack is in it too, because of course she is. She was around. No, I love Joan Cusack. I prefer her as Debbie in Adam's Family Values. But anyway, getting off subject. But yeah, why don't you get a little bit more into like what the climax? I guess.
Oh, okay. So the general comes with, like, tanks and things,
Once he realizes that this is super-duper serious.
Yeah, super-duper serial.
Super serial.
he comes in with, like, actual, like, support of, like, tanks and like soldiers and
jeeps, all that hullabaloo. Yeah, yeah, like the whole, all of 50s paranoia at its worst.
Yeah, the whole nine.
Yep. Except Joseph McCarthy, he wasn't there, thank God. Yeah. So you ruined modern politics, McCarthy.
Yeah.
Well, he didn't help.
Yeah.
No.
So the general comes, and then they finally see the giant, and they try and attack him. What we see earlier in the movie, and what we see especially at this point, is that he really is a weapon. Like, he really does have, like, capacity to just level the planet.
Well, he was equipped to be, like, basically a weapon of mass destruction. Yeah,
exactly.
But, they established at the very beginning of the movie, when he careened down to Earth, he got a bump on his head, like on the actual outside casing of his metal skull.
Right.
Which has impaired his ability to, like, attack, or, like, he doesn't remember or recognize that he's supposed to be attacking things.
So,
which is why Hogarth basically trains him from, being, like, a toddler, more or less.
So when he's attacked, he self-defensively activates those weapon functions.
Yeah.
And somewhere in that whole thing, the bump gets fixed. I don't quite remember.
I don't really remember how it got fixed either, but I know that it did get fixed, because then afterwards he basically becomes a killing machine.
No, yeah, I mean, he's this massive, like his chest opens up and his whole right arm is a gun, and then there's these weird, like, things sticking out of his back.
Is it weird that he reminded me of, do you remember those old, like, tin toys from, like, the 50s and 60s of, like the robots where you crank the back of them with either a key or there's some kind of, like, switch or something?
Yeah,
and then, like, they move kind of mechanically and stuff?
Yeah.
I kind of got a vibe of that.
I feel like it's quite, like intentional.
I'm sure it was, but, like, you know, like, the ones that have, like, the sparking thing in the middle where it's like, like, that's... I was like, I want this to be a tin thing if they haven't made one yet.
Because
I would buy the hell out of that.
Yeah, right? So he's like, very beginning of a rampage. And,
Everyone in the town has seen
Yeah, they're trying to evacuate the town.
Yeah.
Or what have you. And, Hogarth puts himself in harm's way to stop him. And,
Well, they had a moment earlier in the
film. They had a moment earlier. There's several moments.
Yeah, but they're a very important one.
Yeah, some of the more important ones are like, Hogarth's trying to describe to him, like, the importance of not killing things.
Yeah, where it's like, it's bad to kill, but it's okay to die. Where it's like, it's not a bad thing to die.
Right.
But, because what happens is that they see a deer when they're in the forest, first getting acquainted with each other. And the giant doesn't really understand, or he doesn't seem to understand death, at least, like, that's, he didn't have a capacity for empathy or understanding,
right.
like, the feelings or the emotions of another person, a person, I should probably say.
Yeah.
Because he sees a deer get shot when they're in the forest.
Right.
And Hogarth is just, like, reflexively just be like, don't touch it, like, just leave it alone. Like,
yeah,
it was just killed, like, they shot it with that gun. Mm-hmm. And, seeing the gun trigger something in the Iron Giant, wherein basically Hogarth has this speech with him that just kind of showcases that, like, it's not a good idea to kill.
Right.
you shouldn't kill, but don't be afraid of dying.
Right, exactly. So. And then there's also a moment where I feel like there's an earlier moment where they talk about, like, the input, like, being able to decide your own.
Yeah, like, yeah, you are who you choose to be.
Right,
yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So,
which is kind of like their version of "With great power comes great responsibility."
Yeah, right.
But I like it though, because it's
absolutely.
It's good. I think it's a very good moral to kind of instill.
Yeah, yeah.
Among kids, or I mean, like, hell, adults. Like, let's be really honest here. Like, I mean, I still use that metaphor a lot.
There you go.
So,
so Hogarth kind of talks him down, and then. Mansley, ever the piece of garbage.
The piece of human refuse that he is.
Yanks the walkie-talkie out of the
because they were going to attack him with the bomb.
To order, like, the bomb.
They were going to use
bomb.
Like, Rockwell, like a basically.
Like a coastal Maine town.
Yeah, or it's like, you guys don't really understand how much...
No, it was what, not yet 10 years after the bomb, so...
Yeah, well, that in the, The missile was guided towards where the giant was, and at that point,
he was right in the center of town,
and it's like, oh, we can duck and cover, because they had this actually really hilarious
montage earlier, duck and cover.
this amazing, like, incredibly stupid, like, short film that they had back in the 50s, which was, like, basically to survive nuclear fallout, you need to duck and cover.
Yeah. it was this absurd idea that if you hid, like, under a table...
Basically, like, doing a tornado drill under a table or something would protect you enough, where it's like, no, you will die.
Like, no, yeah, it was ridiculous. And they did it for... I mean, that was most of the Cold War.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's what they taught in schools. I'm like, you guys can't honestly think that this is going to do something. It's like, no, they did. They did.
Yeah, I mean, so, and the general's like, that's not going to help. We're right at the center of it. We're all going to die.
And then Kent tries to skip town by stealing a jeep, but they're like, you're not going anywhere.
Oh, yeah, no, the giant
this is your ID. He just, like, stomps right in front of him and just be like, no, you're done.
So, yeah, the Iron Giant stops Kent Mansley from leaving, and then...
He decides to sacrifice himself for the good of the
town. Yeah, so he sees he flies up.
They have a tearful goodbye between him and Hogarth.
No following.
Yeah, you stay, I go. No following.
Yeah, yeah.
Which calls back to what Hogarth said to him before. Yeah. I hate when they do that. It's so sad.
It really is. It's actually
incredibly sad.
So he flies up and flies into space with the bomb.
Mm-hmm. He's like, you are who you choose to be. And he's like, I want to be Superman.
Superman.
Harvey Burton.
Harvey Burton. Attorney at law.
Sad children's films.
Yeah. Well done.
Yeah. but he sacrifices himself for the good of the town and for Hogarth. And
right.
They've got a cute little epilogue where they've made a statue to the giant.
Right, and Dean and
Annie are in
some kind of relationship.
Going steady.
Yeah, as the kids say.
They park together. They park together, which is apparently a term for making out from the 50s. Hmm. It's called parking, I guess. I learned that from both Pleasantville and from my mother.
Huh.
Yeah. So yeah, so they're going out, and
then we see
Hogarth gets a package from the military where they were right. It's like a piece.
Yeah, it's like
I think it's the bolt that secured his jaw together.
Yeah, it's like a bolt or something. Yeah, I think it's a bolt, and it starts blinking.
Mm. Yeah, like one. Well, like once he gets back home, and it's like in the middle of the night, and the reason it starts blinking is because that's how the giant is able to
rebuild himself.
Yeah, he's got a signal on top of his head that actually just draws all the pieces back to him so he can reconstruct himself.
Right, which we see earlier in the movie.
It turns out that he's, all these body parts are trying to find him in Antarctica, I think.
Yeah, something like that. So that was kind of a nice little epilogue ending.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the movie.
Yeah, that's the movie. I mean, it's pretty succinct. It's about 80 some odd minutes, I think.
Yeah, it's right. It's
not
that,
quite 90, but pretty close.
Yeah, it's that sweet, like 120.
Mm-hmm. So, I guess the, what should we really kind of get into about it is just like...
Well, I mean, at this point, like many of them, the movies we talk about is kind of a cult classic.
We've got a penchant for cult classics, I've noticed. I don't know. But I just find that they're all consistently really good.
Yeah,
so I don't really think of them as cult classics. I'm just like, I just know that this movie is really good.
Yeah, yeah, but that's the thing, though, is like, I think that's kind of the thing about, like, a cult classic, is that, like, it sometimes is good, it just commercially flopped.
Yeah.
Which is absolutely the case with The Iron Giant, and as we were reading, we were looking up some stuff earlier.
The marketing
was so bad.
Well, it was just, what was it, like, they just kind of didn't really know what to do with it at the time, or, like, how to best promote it, wherein, it also came out roughly, I think it was roughly the same time that Tarzan did.
Yeah, it was within the same year, at least.
This is right at the very tail end of the Disney Renaissance, and it's very hard to compete with the House and Mouse with stuff like that, because they throw so much money into
it. Oh, yeah.
They've got, like, tie-ins for everything. They do, like, they start merchandising everything, like, I don't even know, like, 4 months before the movie comes out.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, or like at least it feels like a while anyway.
Yeah, it feels like it's a very long sort of cycle of merchandise and
promotion. I feel like the real drag with The Iron Giant is that it's such a solid film. And it was directed by Brad Bird, who we also know is the director of The Incredibles. He was the creative genius behind Family Dog?
Yes, Family Dog. There's like an Easter egg reference to in the movie. Yeah.
He was also responsible for I think a handful of really classic Simpsons episodes, I believe.
Okay. Well, and he also this was the first movie he directed.
Yes, that's right.
He also directed Ratatouille.
Mm-hmm.
And weirdly, like one of the Mission Impossible movies.
Yeah, the live action. Oh, was it Ghost Protocol? Was
that? Yeah, it? I think Ghost Protocol
like,
was the
director. I haven't really seen any of them, but it's I would go see it if Brad Bird's doing it. Though I didn't.
Yeah, just interested enough.
It'll be the one that I'm considering seeing. So.
Yeah.
But there were some very interesting creative techniques about the film itself because.
Yeah.
With the Iron Giant, like the actual giant himself, he is computer generated. So he's CGI, but they applied a very interesting technique on top of it. It was like, I don't even want to call it rotoscoping, but it kind of was.
Yeah, I guess it would, like, that would be a good way to describe it.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's in a way, it's kind of rotoscoping, wherein they would have the CGI animation of the Iron Giant, and then they would draw on top of it to give it a more kind of,
to make it feel more like it was, more a piece of the movie, because if you had, like, just a straight CGI character in a movie, in a fully hand-animated movie, that CGI character is going to seem really strange unless you do something to...
It'd feel really, like, incongruous or something, where it's like, you can tell that there's clearly something really different about this character, but for some reason, it's like, I don't know why, but I never got an Uncanny Valley thing from watching this film with
never.
The Iron Giant, like, at all, and I was genuinely surprised at that, since all the characters are 2D, like, or, like, they're all cel-animated.
Right, yeah, that's actually when we were reading up on it. It was saying it was a CGI model. I was like, I wouldn't have guessed.
Yeah, I know.
Like, it's very well done. So that was really cool. I really love that about this movie that they kind of adapted in that way.
And it's got the film itself has a very interesting like anti-gun, anti-violence policy.
Yeah, well, like we were. Oh, I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. What is it, that whole, like, kind of pivotal scene of, two of the biggest emotional exchanges that happen between the Iron Giant and Hogarth both stem around, like, violence, or they stem around, like, weapons or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is, like, both when Hogarth actually, he feels empathy towards the giant when he saves him from being electrocuted, and then once he consoles the giant after seeing a deer get shot in the forest, where he, that when Hogarth is telling him, like, it's bad to kill, but it's not bad to die. So, because if you die, you have a soul, and then your soul goes, goes to heaven or goes somewhere else, and souls can't die. So, which I thought was a very profound message for, like, an 11-year-old, I guess.
Yeah, he's a 11-year-old.
Something like that. But, what were you going to say?
Oh, no, I was going to say, like, when we were watching there was a short special about, like, the making of the Iron Giant.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that...
hosted by Vincent K. Diesel.
One of the things that Brad Bird had said was kind of, like, part of the concept behind the movie was, like, what if a gun had a soul?
Yeah.
Which, I mean, is very, like...
Which is an interesting...
You look back at it, you're like, that's...
Yeah, I could dig that. Yeah, well, plus this came at roughly, let's see, this movie came out in 1999, but the timing was coincidental to when Columbine and all that happened.
Yeah, weirdly it was.
Well, like, it wasn't like, and it wasn't fitted like that, but it just kind of worked out.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting that was sort of the timing of it.
I don't know, I mean, it's just like, it was interesting to see a movie that is, or especially a movie marketed towards kids, where, like, a lot of kids' films will try to skirt that whole, like, PG kind of rating by incorporating more, like, violence or inappropriate, like, humor, like, toilet humor, or, like, kind of vaguely sexual humor, even though they probably won't get it, depending on whatever age they are.
Yeah.
But this movie really does not do that very much at all. I mean, there's a couple of, like, toilet humor things, but it's really not that much.
I mean, that movie is it's pretty solidly written, like...
Oh, yeah, I think the script is excellent, and the characters are so incredibly fleshed out for, like, 80 minutes. Like, it's like, I want to hang out with all of them, except maybe Kent.
Yeah, but not a huge fan of Kent Mansley.
I think I would like to look at him at least once. Yeah, he works for the government. I would like to see him at least once, and then never talk to him again.
I would imagine he would be, like, that douchebag that you would see at, like, a Starbucks or something now. Like, the one that's way too oddly specific about things.
I need a venti caramel frappuccino with light foam and...
And can you drizzle some cinnamon on there? It's like, we can't drizzle cinnamon, sir, I don't want it.
Cinnamon doesn't drizzle.
Yeah.
It's not a liquid.
Cinnamon is not capable of drizzling, sir.
I can sprinkle it. No,
it has to be a drizzle, all right? Like, I don't know. What about this was not clear, madam? No, like, he kind of strikes me, like, he'd be that kind of person now, but, in the movies, like, or in the movie itself, it makes sense that he's very much, like, that complete archetype of every single paranoid politician from the 50s, wherein it's, like, they are, like, at that point, like, they're trained to sort of, like, this is how we develop fear-mongering, this is how, like, try to manipulate an audience,
and
like, it's terrifying, but that's what his character is.
Right,
like,
well, and I think the best...
And Hogarth sees completely through him, which is what sets him off so much.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he can't lie to Hogarth, or, like, he can try to, but it's not gonna
work. Yeah, but he can't really, like, play Hogarth.
Yeah, Hogarth just cuts right through all that garbage.
I think probably one of the best examples of that is when they're talking about Sputnik. He's like, do you know what Sputnik is, son? He's like, yeah, it's the first satellite launched into space. First foreign satellite. Like,
yeah, he feels the need to correct Hogarth on it, where it's like, Hogarth doesn't really see it in terms of, like, us versus them. It's just more of like, hey, isn't this awesome that we were actually able to get into space? That's pretty cool. And, like, and Kent's like, I don't trust anything that's not American. It's like, then...
If it doesn't bleed red, white, and blue, I want no part of it.
These colors don't run. These colors. So dumb. Like, if he's born any other time, man. No one would take him seriously.
No, but in the 50s, he's perfect.
I mean, he's basically Joseph McCarthy. Let's just kind of get into it. But, I like the comparison between that, because it's also interesting to see the fact that Annie is presented as this single mother and in the 50s, wherein, like, at that point, it was pretty much unheard of for a woman to, like, unless, like, if Hogarth's father either left or died in the war.
Which...
There's no real reason that she would probably be... Or she would be very, shunned for being a single mother.
Yeah, right.
I mean, like, I don't even know if we're still quite there, but not really at all. But at that point, I thought it was interesting to see just, like, how many sacrifices Annie goes through to just kind of, like, try to give them a decent sort of life. But it's like, she seems to, like, all she ever does is work. I don't, like, they only have one meal together, really.
Yeah.
Because she's working every other time.
Well,
so.
Yeah, which I think is significant because this movie takes place over 5 days.
Mm-hmm. Which is crazy because of how many season changes they seem to have.
Yeah, it's kind of weird because it definitely starts in, like, late autumn, and then suddenly there's snow.
Mm-hmm. I mean, granted, it's Maine, so it happens. Like, I went to school in Boston, and it's like, like, the weather fluctuates. It's not like that whole thing of, like, just, if you don't like the weather, just wait 5 minutes, but it's pretty close.
That's St. Louis,
apparently. Oh, no, that's St. Louis. That's a Missouri adage. We looked at this, there's, like, some kind of report, or, like, just some sort of note that we had read that said that the movie supposedly takes place over 5 days.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, I don't know if I necessarily believe that, given how rapidly all the seasons kind of change, but...
Well, but it fits, because we've got...
It does make sense.
Like, Wednesday night, so it's like Wednesday through, like, Wednesday, Thursday.
Like, the following Sunday? Is that what it is?
Yeah, so I guess it ends on Sunday.
Yeah. That's right, yeah.
So,
yeah,
like...
So the giant falls to Earth on that Wednesday.
On Wednesday night.
Hogarth sees him the following night... And he goes to meet up with the giant again and tries to go feed him on that Friday.
Right.
Was the rest. And then on Saturday, that's when, he hides him on that, was that that Friday night? Was that it?
Yeah, let me see. So Hogarth visits his mom at dinner.
I think that's what it is.
Yeah, so Friday he goes...
Because the military gets called in on which day? On that Friday or Saturday? I think it's Saturday.
Hold on, I'm trying to trace it because it's... So Friday he goes, we see the scene of him in school and the duck and cover gag.
Mm-hmm.
And then afterwards he finds the giant.
Mm-hmm.
Then he meets Kent. And then he brings the giant to the junkyard. Saturday morning is the, where are you going? Where are you going? Where are you going?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And, like, he ends up having to, being coerced into spending, like, the morning with Kent.
And wait, and then after that, is that when he feeds the giant? Or no, I'm sorry, that's when he goes back over to
Dean. He goes back to Dean, and they have the lake scene.
Oh, that's right. I love the lake scene.
And then the deer scene. Yeah?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's like, you're right in the middle of the row.
Yeah?
All right.
I love you. You're the, like, yeah? You're in the middle. Yeah? Okay.
All right, whatever. Bye. Okay, thanks.
So good. Yeah, and then it looks like Sunday. Yeah, Sunday morning. The army comes in.
Okay.
And then, so it starts that Wednesday night, right, Sunday
yeah.
morning.
Yeah.
So, unusual, I mean, maybe it's like late November or something like that.
Yeah. When you get snow. That. Yeah, I would buy that. Thereabouts.
But yeah, it was kind of.
It was, yeah, I thought it was just, actually, did they actually mention like a month in the very beginning? I remember where they have that kind of title card when Sputnik is going past the camera.
Oh, I don't remember. I think it was just like 1957.
I think it was just 1957 also, but either way. I thought like the script was so tight, man.
It's so good.
Like, they like thought of everything.
This side is junk. This side is art. What you have
currently have in your mouth is art. It's like there's just so many great characters in this film. I can't get over it.
Yeah.
And like I really like seeing a character kind of like Hogarth, where like he is kind of nerdy. Where it's like I think this is sort of before it kind of became a real thing of like making like every other protagonist like really nerdy. Where it's like this is why he doesn't fit in. Where it's like
right.
Where it's like because no one really cares about like if you had a protagonist that's like oh this kid's a jock. He's super handsome and talented. All the girls want to hang out with him. But he has so many problems. I mean,
guess
like,
what?
Like
no that, one's that, interested in that.
Well,
character.
Like that was She's All That, where it's like they did that with like a lot of like teen movies and stuff, where it's like the character that has no real discernible problems is not as interesting.
Yeah,
where,
absolutely.
Where it's just, I don't know. I guess it's just it's harder to identify
with
them.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say.
So wherein like and Hogarth, he's obviously a very precocious kid. He's only like 12 or like 11 or 12, whatever it is, and I know, like, just his fascination and his sense of imagination and inventiveness with, like, how he goes about, like, trying to devise a way to, like, hide the giant and to learn more about him.
Right.
And just his innate curiosity wherein, like, everyone else is freaked out by the giant completely. But he initially is kind of apprehensive about it. He's like, I don't trust this thing. But then he just, they just start to.
Yeah, they end up.
Their friendship just kind of blossoms.
And yeah,
it's really,
absolutely.
It's very sweet. It's a very nice story. Man, I don't know. It's hard for me to kind of describe what I like best about it, but I think it's just, overall, it's just a very well-told story.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
It's, I don't know, it's just like, it's, I think all the best movies that I've ever seen have a very strong sense of, like, of what the purpose is for why the movie exists, like, what they're trying to say, it's not preachy about it, it's very subtle, it's very, well-designed, and there's also it's very quotable,
right? Yeah,
which I love. Which is probably another aspect
it's one of our big ones.
Yeah, we just I just love quotes. I mean, like, it's just like it just goes to show like how strong a script can be. Like if that's the stuff that people take with it, where it's like because people were quoting Mean Girls for God knows how long.
Oh my God,
like, they still are.
Yeah, that's like
stop trying to make fetch happen. It's not gonna happen. Like,
that's still a meme. Like that still occurs every like 6 or 8 months.
It's still a thing where it's like where you can always tell like a person that's like, oh, on Wednesdays we wear pink, or like or on October 3rd he asked me what day it was and I said it's October 3rd.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so. I don't know, it's just, like, I think there's just a sense of connectedness that comes within, like, having a really well-thought-out movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Wherein, like, you can go to a movie and just enjoy something that's just, like, kind of dumb and weird, or, like, you know, like, just, like, an action thingy, but it's not as quotable, unless the dialogue is really bad.
Yeah, unless it's just got, like, amazingly, just, like, crap dialogue.
Yeah, just, like, really shoddily
there
made.
Go, that's what
yeah.
Before.
Yeah, that works. I know what you're going for.
We'll take the Raptors and we'll put them in the army.
No, no, we won't. I still haven't seen that movie. So,
me neither, but that's apparently a
all
thing.
All of our friends have been telling
Vincent
us to
D'Onofrio
not
says.
See it. We gotta put the Raptors in the air. Why, Vincent D'Onofrio? You were in Full Metal Jacket.
You were so much better in anything else.
You were in Men in Black.
You were in Adventures in Babysitting.
Yes, he was. He was a blonde Greek god in that movie.
No, he was clearly Nordic because he was Thor.
He was a blonde Nordic god. But he had the physique of Atlas, who was tenuously related to the Greeks.
Yes.
Wait, what was his Roman name for Atlas? Was it still Atlas?
I think.
Was it the one name that they did not have a homonym for?
I don't know. Well, it's not so much that they were homonyms so much as
well,
they
like
were...
They're...
like, there is actually some divergence in the pantheons. It's just the Roman pantheon just kind of absorbed the Greek pantheon, then used the names. For example...
So what is it that, like, separates Aphrodite from Venus, even though they're essentially the
same? I think
same
they're
guy.
The same, but, like, Hades, I believe, is the Roman name, correct?
No, Hades is the Greek name. Nero is his Roman name, I think. I'm pretty sure it is.
Well, either way, in one of the two, in the Roman pantheon, that god is originally related to farming.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Like, it just did a weird...
That's totally unrelated.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, you can make the tenuous relationship that, like, Hades is married to Persephone, who is related to nature and crops and things.
Oh, I guess that's true.
So, like, worship of Hades was kind of related, sort of, almost tangentially to crops.
That's true.
But yeah, weirdly...
Well, to be fair, if you're growing crops, you probably fear death.
Yeah,
so.
True.
Yeah.
So there was some kind of weird thing like that. But a lot of... For the most part, the gods translate over pretty succinctly.
Yeah, fair enough. How did we get on Roman gods again?
Atlas.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, Atlas. And Vincent D'Onofrio...
Being
intimidating in Adventures in Babysitting.
He was.
Man, that movie is good, though. But yeah, what else can we talk about with this one? I guess why the marketing was so crappy for it.
Well, yeah, it was like they had plans for it or something in it.
Well, I think like what they were doing, like they had gotten the film out on time for like whatever the schedule was with like a tie-in. I think they had like a Burger King.
Yeah, that's what it was. There was a Burger King tie-in.
Toy tie-in. They had a Burger King tie food tie-in.
No. A Burger King Thai food toy tie-in.
A Burger King pad Thai tie-in. Burger King pad Thai tie-in for a free iPad.
Wow, that's impressive.
For a Thai iPad.
For a Thai pad.
For a Thai pad. Taipei? No. Anyway.
Taiwan?
Tay
Diggs?
Titus Burgess? Tay Diggs? Anyway, but no, yeah,
Well, so they had this tie-in planned, and I think, what was it, like, Burger King was like, there's no way they'll get it out on time, and then they did.
No, and then they did, and they were like, oh, well, we don't have the things ready. It's like, okay, so you guys messed up
your end
of the deal.
You dropped the ball here.
So, you guys suck.
Yeah.
we are gonna blame some of this stuff on you, and a lot of it also came from, I mean, like, Warner Brothers, because they didn't push it as much as they could have. The film only made back, it was produced on a budget of $70 million, it made back $31.
Was it $31?
So, $31.
I was looking earlier and it said $23, but...
I saw $31 on, but that was on Wikipedia, so they could be lying. It's not the first time someone's ever lied on Wikipedia, but...
I mean, they lie on Wikipedia. Would someone do that?
just
go
on
the internet
and
lie?
Oh, Buster.
I love it.
I love how it's, like, do you think that they were actually doing that to be sincere, that, like, maybe one of the writers at Arthur is like, there's no way that this will get through, and it's like, oh, no, it did. It did, and then, and they have to have the poor voice actor who does Buster pretend like he's sincere.
Yeah.
It's like, you mean someone would just do that? Go on the internet and make up lies? Like, yes. It's
no
called
idea.
The YouTube comments. Yes.
Oh, God.
It's called any comment section.
Yeah, the worst thing.
Yep. It's called the comments on your local news channels, articles that they put up every...
Yep.
It's like, just don't do it.
Just don't read the comments.
Please don't read the comments. But yeah, I think, did you think it was a weird choice for them to go with Vin Diesel? Because, like, at the time, I think he was pretty much a relative unknown. I don't really know what else he had been in. I was going to say Degrassi, but then I realized that that was Drake. So, it was certainly Drake. I don't, because I'm not really familiar with any of the stuff that he, to be honest, the first movie that introduced me to Vin Diesel was this movie.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. I didn't know who he was before that. I think that's actually probably true for a lot of people in our age group.
Probably. Well, I mean, where,
like, you either know him from Fast and the Furious or you know him from The Iron Giant.
But when did Fast and Furious come out? Was that, that wasn't the same year, was it?
No, I think, I think
it was like 2000 or something.
You think so? I feel like it was 97 or 98.
I don't know if it was that.
I'm just throwing out numbers.
I don't know if it was that early, though. I feel like it could have been, I don't know, maybe.
I feel like it's older than, 2001, well.
What, the first Fast and the Furious?
If,
but, yeah, because I think Tokyo Drift was 2003.
The naming scheme in these movies is all over the place. It's, the first movie is The Fast and the Furious. The second one is Too Fast, Too Furious. Too Furious,
Tokyo Drift.
And then it's like, Fast and Furious.
Yeah, Fast and Furious.
Yeah.
So, or is it Too Fast, Too Furious, or no?
No, no, Too Fast, Too Furious was the second one. The third one, I think, was Fast and Furious.
Which one was Tokyo Drift?
Tokyo Drift was 3.
Okay.
And
then 4 was...
I don't know what 4... Wait, crap.
Are you really Googling this?
Yes! It bothers me.
I know. Well, I mean, but they do that deliberately. Like, they renumbered all of them so that it would just be like, we don't want people to know that there are 7 of these movies out now.
It's pretty obvious when you say Fast 7.
Fast 7, like, I like Fast 5.
Fast 5 is 1.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, okay. Let's see if I can find it.
Or they also, I think, wasn't 6 like Fast and the Furious?
I think it was Fast... Okay. Fast and Furious, Tokyo Drift. Fast and Furious was the fourth one.
Mm-hmm.
Fifth one was Fast 5.
Fast 5, okay, what was...
6 was Fast and Furious 6, and then 7 is Furious 7.
I don't know why they did that, because, like, but, like, and there's no consistency with it, but they do gangbusters.
You know,
like, I didn't really know, okay, look, I knew the movies were popular, but not that popular.
Well, you and I tried to watch, what was it, like, Fast 7, I think.
Yeah.
And, like, neither of us paid any attention, but...
I actually
kinda, we still kind of had fun with it.
I mean, like, I was just, like, I was more just impressed of, like, how ridiculous everything was. Or it's just, like, what is going on?
It is a true it's like, I think it's probably a good testament to, like, spectacle creep.
Yeah, I thought it was, I mean...
Like, that and the, like...
I guess I was just kind of blown away at, like, the fact that, like, they're so consistently popular. A lot of people go see them. And they... I don't know, I think because, like, because I don't, I genuinely don't remember a single aspect of the plot itself, but the environments that they end up in, the, some of the car chases are insane.
Yeah.
But they're really cool.
Yeah, they're just fun to look at.
It's, I felt like I was a 6-year-old all over again, but with more of a penchant for, I don't know, cars exploding.
Exploding everywhere.
Cars exploding, careening into expensive shopping malls, all that stuff. I don't know, but.
Yeah. Anywho.
So, get your stuff together, Fast Furious. Have a
figure out a consistent
naming scheme. Yeah, we need a consistent naming scheme, because how am I supposed to organize all my DVDs if the numbers don't coincide?
Like, what am I going to do then?
Why do you hate me, Fast and Furious? Like, why don't you like my unnecessarily fastidious and tedious way of organizing films,
Fast 7? How difficult it is for me to alphabetize my films when your films are all over the place. I can't do it, man.
Look, I get that you want to be different, but I'm just saying it's not conducive to me.
And my organization skills. Yeah,
and what I like. So.
Anywho, yeah, I don't know what Vin Diesel was in prior to The Iron Giant. I mean, he was in some stuff, but nothing, like, super huge.
Yeah, I feel like he was either maybe some bit parts, or maybe he might have done a soap opera, actually.
Maybe.
He's kind of got a soap opera kind of veneer about it. A little bit.
I don't know, I haven't watched many soap operas.
I don't know. I mean, like, I could imagine him being, like, the guy that the main girl would be seeing on the side. Like, maybe he could be, like,
Side chick.
He's the side chick? No. He's not the mistress, he's the mister.
Well... The side dude?
Side dude seems a lot like side boob. But I guess technically if you tilt his head in a different way, it could look like a side boob. From behind, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
all day. But no, oh yeah, man, all day. No, yeah, no. I don't know. He kind of strikes me as like a very swarthy pool boy. I guess maybe he's just like.
When he was younger, he could have done that really well. Like,
pardon me, madam. Another robin got stuck in the air filter. Do you want me to clean it out for you? I can use my dirty gardener's gloves. No, I don't know.
Yeah, so I don't know, like, I do think, like, because there was weirdly, Sean Connery was one of the people they were looking at for it.
Which I still think would be hilarious.
It would be too ridiculous. It'd spend the entire, like, anytime he speaks, it'd just be giggling.
It would just sound like Sean Connery doing ham radio.
Right?
He'd have, like, that weird, like, kind of tinny quality to his voice.
Yeah.
It's like, you stay, I go, no following. Hogarth.
Rock.
Superman.
Superman.
I would still pay money to see that.
I would still watch it,
would love for him to do a dub. Like, if they had to do a dub just for Scotland, if he could do that and then someone could send me that print, that would be terrific.
That'd be great.
But I don't know.
James Earl Jones was another one they were thinking of casting, but I think Vin Diesel probably ultimately was a good choice.
Yeah, like, oddly enough, he actually brought a lot of soul into it.
No, yeah, he really brought the...
Yeah, he brought the business.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, it's, I think it's probably more the fact of, like, if it was someone like James Earl Jones or Sean Connery, we would be so attached to our idea.
Yeah,
and,
to that,
like, and them to the being familiarity characters, of that voice. Especially because James Earl Jones was also Mufasa, so if he does any other, like,
and
future.
Darth Vader,
and like, Darth Vader, and the CNN announcer, and it's like, if they had him do another one, it's like, look, I love James Earl Jones' voice, but after a certain point, it's just like, I kind of just want to associate him with, like, a few things. If he's the Iron Giant, I think it wouldn't really ring true.
Yeah, well, and I think it would run the danger of sort of like the actor overshadowing the role.
Yeah, that's true. That's
right. Right, where like, yeah, okay, Vin Diesel's pretty popular now, but
well, do you think like how much of him already doing the voice of the Iron Giant influenced him being Groot in Guardians of the Galaxy?
I think it probably influenced it a lot, because the sound editor for both those characters was the same person.
That's true. Oh, yeah, do you think he would have... I don't know if he would have recommended Vin Diesel, but he'd just be like, I don't know, like, I had a lot of fun working with him on the Iron Giant, so...
I don't know, I think it probably had an influence, because, I mean, it's sort of, in some ways, a similar character, mm-hmm. Where they both have very limited vocabularies,
But what's weird is that, like, even though Vin Diesel is known as an action star, he's just there as a voice actor.
Yeah, which I think is impressive, because he actually does, in those two roles, he's done good voice work.
Yeah, he definitely has.
Which is another danger you run into sometimes when you use, like, a popular live-action actor, like, for voices. Like, the example I always go to, because I'm unkind and I don't like her, is Tigress in Kung Fu Panda is voiced by Angelina Jolie.
Yeah.
And she's very flat. Like,
which is a real shame.
It's a real shame, because I really would
Tigress
like to
is
like
a great
that character,
character
and things, but I don't like Angelina Jolie, and I don't like her as a voice actor.
And but I guess that's fair, because the only other thing I've known her for doing voice acting in is Shark Tale, which is that god-awful Will Smith fish movie. It's
Is that Will Smith?
Oh, yeah. Are you kidding me? Have you looked at his character?
I'm not saying
it's Will Smith.
I'm not saying it doesn't look like Will Smith. That's obvious.
Oh, no.
I just didn't realize
Will
he actually
Smith.
Signed on, like, yeah,
oh, no, yeah
I want to be a fish.
No, yeah. He did. So did Martin Scorsese, Jack Black, Ziggy Marley, and, like, and Renee Zellweger, who actually kind of looks a lot like a fish. But it's...
I mean, Jack Black is a legitimately good voice actor.
No, he actually is, but, it's... I just associate him with, have you ever seen the Clone High episode with the, where they smoke raisins as, like, as an illicit drug?
I probably saw it many years ago, but it's been a long time since I've watched Clone High.
Watch it again, because there's, he's in it as the pusher man, because he's, like, he's pushing raisins onto the kids to get them to smoke it so that
That's
they'll hallucinate.
Amazing.
And it's... fantastic.
I bet.
Well, because, like, the entire episode is kind of like Tommy, like you know, like that Who musical that they had done. Like, they did, like, a musical film, or it kind of like Interstellar 555, where, like, the entire soundtrack is mostly music.
Okay.
Like, there's a few kind of brief scenes of characters talking to each other, but most of it has music behind it.
Okay.
It's excellent. I think I actually have some of the songs, but... I don't know. Anyway,
I'll have to look it up.
But no, yeah, you should watch it again. If you haven't seen that one, you should check it out too, listener.
Yeah.
Also, thank you for listening.
Yeah, thanks for listening, as always.
Sorry, we've had a very weird past couple of weeks, so.
Yeah.
Big-ish kind of things happening, I guess.
Yeah, well, yeah.
So, well, yeah, because Robbie's going to be moving away at the end of the month. No, don't reassure me.
No.
I want to grow to resent you so I won't feel as bad when you leave me. No. No, he's patting my shoulder again. And he's touching my face and telling me to shut the hell up. I just love doing that, like the shh. Shut
you
your
do.
Mouth.
That's you, what you're.
Shut your mouth.
You do that, and you do the.
Oh yeah, I do the shh. Where like I get way too uncomfortably close with like my hand, like just like shh. Well, that's a thing that that my friend Bridget and I do whenever we're really drunk. It's like we're really drunk. If we get involved in like if one of us is just like over talking or something, or just being too silly or being too weird, we'll like drape our hand, like we'll basically like kind of like caress the other person's face, like going down, just like shh. And it's like it's so dumb, oh, but like it makes me laugh every single time.
I love it.
She commits more to it than I do.
Oh, I bet.
I usually just eventually just like, oh, fine. So, but yeah, I guess it's roughly about it. Any other last bits you want to contribute to? Oh, also Jennifer Aniston is Annie.
Yeah.
She didn't really have as much to say about her character in the making of thing that we watched on the DVD. But
yeah.
Oh, we should mention that it's getting a re-release.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God.
Which we totally called, by the way.
So we were watching it the other night, and and Tracy was like, this one should get like a Blu-ray release or something. Like, this movie was so shafted.
Yeah, where it's like, do you think that's gonna happen?
And then, like, literally yesterday, the day before we recorded this episode, there was an announcement it's going to get, like, a re-release into theaters.
In September.
Mm-hmm. And then they're gonna also do a full Blu-ray release.
Which is awesome.
Yeah, so.
I can't wait for that. I'm totally gonna get it.
And one of the things I saw also said there's gonna be some extra content.
Yeah, I've heard 10 minutes of previously unseen footage, which I cannot wait for.
Exciting!
But I don't know, what do you think? Do you think that they, is there a particular scene that you think that they cut more out of?
I don't know,
I think they probably might have cut out more backstory, because I remember seeing there were some deleted scenes that I think I've seen on YouTube or something where Annie talks a little bit more about, like, Hogarth missing his dad and everything. And, there's a couple more, but I think some of that stuff is either cut for time or it just didn't flow as well, so they got rid of it.
Yeah, because I feel like that, like, it's such a tight narrative.
Mm-hmm.
And, like,
I would have liked to see more history of Kent Mansley being there before, where, like, maybe he's, like, once he finally gets to Rockwell, he starts putting on airs, like, trying to pretend like he's more important than he actually is.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we do kind of, we see that a little bit where he just, like, straight up steals the mayor's car.
Oh, yeah,
he's
that.
Like, I need to borrow your car, and just runs outside and takes it.
The mayor doesn't even, like, I don't even think he tries to protest. He's just like, oh, okay.
No, yeah, you just see him, like, I think you just, like, see him out the window, like, my
he's
car.
Like, what the heck? Like, I guess it's more of, like, No, I think it's more of, what I was wondering about was with, the way that the general interacts with Kent, where it's, like, Kent seems like he might be kind of, like, he's obviously an underling, but, like, the way that the general just kind of, like, reacts
kind of
to him.
Brushes him off.
Yeah, completely. Like, almost as like, if you tell me you've got a feeling, I'm not going to do anything. If you can get me a photo, I can probably get some troops in there.
Actually, that's a good point, because, like, the way he, when he's on the phone with the general in that scene,
it, almost like this has happened before.
Yeah, he's got a feeling about this one. Like,
where it's like, maybe Kent's actually a conspiracy theorist.
Yeah,
we knew what those were.
He's like Mulder, but with less respected.
He's Mulder, but with Scully's hair.
And no respect.
And no respect whatsoever.
No, that's the weird thing about Mulder is he actually was, like, well-respected. And then he got into the FBI. And just amazing
everything.
Plummet.
Really?
Yeah, the character is meant to be, like, sort of like this almost kid genius type. Not that he's a kid, but...
Well, he was, like, a prodigy or something?
Yeah, yeah. He had done a lot of, like, really interesting good work. And then he got into the FBI and jumped into the X-Files, which is, like, a dead end. Like, it's not...
Wait, so, how did he get involved with that? Or they deliberately put him in there where it's just like...
No, he wanted to do that.
He wanted to do that because he was just like, the rest of the stuff bores me, I just want to do something weird.
No, it has to do with his whole backstory of, like, his sister who he shares abducted by aliens and all this.
Oh, I see. All right. Thing. Makes sense.
So
I should probably watch The X-Files.
It's decent.
I never got around to it, but I've heard good things.
Yeah.
I've heard really good things.
It's coming back, too.
What? Mm-hmm. Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because there's a... First of all, I remember, like, hearing about it, but then also, like, Joel McHale tweeted that he was going to be in it, and then Kumail Nanjiani responded with, "You son of a..."
"You son of a gun."
Like, he was so angry.
Oh, my...
Because, of course, he was.
How dare... Yeah, Kumail's great at being angry. No, we love Kumail.
We do.
Yep. But, yeah, I guess that's about it. I mean, like, I will probably end up... I will more than likely end up going to see it in theaters. If they really, like, gussy it up, I can't wait. I mean, and if they have, and if, oh, by the way, if those 10 minutes are even roughly animated, and it goes into theaters, I am totally seeing it.
Yeah, right.
But realistically, it's probably just going to be a DVD extra. Yeah. Or, sorry, Blu-ray extra. But it's okay. It was well worth it.
I'll get that Blu-ray.
So, I'll totally get that Blu-ray. Let's get that Blu-ray. But, I guess that's about it, really.
Yeah, I think we've kind of...
Yeah, but, I think it's a fantastic movie. If you're a 50s buff, if you just really like, robots, if you like the idea of WALL-E but don't really like the environmental message,
You might enjoy this, yeah.
You'll probably enjoy it.
One thing I do want to, one thing I do want to point out, just
did we miss anything?
No, nothing, like, big, but, like, there's a scene, the espresso scene.
Oh,
which
yeah.
is just kind of like a neat tidbit. Oh, like normally, yeah. normally we notice that a director has voiced some character. In this case, there's a scene in which Dean gives Hogarth espresso.
He's trying to distract him from noticing the giant.
Yeah, trying to distract him. And so he, Brad Bird animated the whole scene himself of Hogarth like running around out. And like, freaking out because he's a 10-year-old on espresso.
Where it's like, this is CoffeeZilla.
Yeah, it was amazing.
And Howard's like, no, I can handle it. And then he's jittering. He's like, talking a mile a minute.
Yeah,
and
it's like...
and talking about, like, why he gets beat up so much. Because he just... Because he went up another grade because he was, like, really smart. And he's like, I'm not smart. I just do the stupid homework. They could go up a grade, too.
No, yeah, he was actually, like... I love that scene.
That entire, like, that just whole exchange of, like, Hogarth describing his plight is just fantastic. Yeah,
I love that.
Because it's so sincere. It's like, yeah, like, I've been there, man. I get it.
Yeah, like, you get the homework.
It's like, just do the stupid homework, guys. It's really not hard.
Yeah.
It's like, it's not my fault you're lazy.
Yeah, right?
Like, don't try to make me feel bad for that. But, yeah, I just love Hogarth's character. I think he's such a cool kid. Like, I feel like he's going to grow up to probably own, like, a bookstore. I don't know. And I hope that Annie and Dean eventually got married. Or lived in a commune together, probably. Maybe once Hogarth hits that point where he's like, I kind of want to go to college. I want to study astronomy or something. And his mom and Dean are like, well, sorry, Hogarth, we sold most of your belongings because physical possessions are meaningless in the grand scheme of things. And he'll be like, how could you do that? But then nothing will matter because he'll have met up with a giant again at that point and they will eventually conquer the world. The one thing they could never do. That's my prediction for the next 10 minutes of footage that we're missing. You can do with it what you will. That's fine.
Well, all right.
Yep. So think about it. Think about it. Makes sense, doesn't it? It doesn't not make sense. Oh, God, my mind is elsewhere. Anyway, but, yeah, I guess that's about it.
Yeah, I think we can safely
And again, we're sorry for these past episodes.
Yeah, we're sorry.
Being delayed. It's been kind of a combination of things. It's mostly me being bad with getting art out on time, but that class that I was taking had finished, and now things are a lot quieter. But still,
for now,
it's kind of killing me, like, doing a graphic every single week, so I think I'm just going to start making just a place graphic.
Well,
just cause,
and I think we're probably going to...
Well, we have to kind of reevaluate maybe some of the ways that we do the show a little bit. Well, we have to accommodate for a couple of things.
Yeah, so you'll probably soon in the near future...
I think we'll try to
see things change a little bit.
We'll try to still get them out relatively frequently. It's, is what it is, I guess. Yeah. Like, I don't know. It's just sort of kind of how
the world works now, I guess.
Just the way our lives are at this point.
That's true.
So.
But, yeah.
But thank you for listening.
Thank you very much for listening. We hope you enjoyed this episode.
Yeah.
I highly recommend checking out The Iron Giant. You can probably get it on, Amazon, I would think.
I believe it's on Amazon.
Amazon. It may be on Netflix. I'm not sure. They may have taken it off at this point. They go through cycles of, putting it back on.
Yeah, so they kind of,
It'll probably be back. They may actually put it back on once the DVD.
Yeah, I was going to say that released. Might be a...
Maybe.
A smart promotional thing to do.
Yeah, not a terrible idea, guys. But, yeah, and just, and or worst case scenario, just hold out for the next DVD that's coming
out.
Yeah,
I mean, it's coming soon.
I'm sure it's going to be pretty awesome. So, yep, I guess that's it, guys. Thank you very much, and we hope you have a pleasant whatever day it is that you're listening to this.
Yes.
So thank you, and we will talk to you later.
Bye.